Hello and welcome to another edition of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Be sure to follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. As always, I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, is my good friend, Harris Wishard. What's up, Harris?
What's going on, Nick? Happy to be with you tonight. And I'm going to start calling you Nick. I only go to games that feature buzzer beaters, Fay.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to go to the Nets game last night where Brook Lopez, a player that I like very much, was able to hit a buzzer beater for the Nets and get the W. And Harris is referring to a Knicks game that I went to about a month ago, and Carmelo Anthony hit a game winner. So been pretty lucky this year, and I've had good seats both times, so I can't complain.
It's awesome, man. And Brooke giving the Nets a much-needed win. Anytime you can get a win down the stretch like this, and what has been a pretty rough year for the Nets, it's a silver lining, I guess, in the sense that it's been a really rough year, and so any bright spot is welcomed with open arms from your fan base, Nick.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, I mean, going to the game, I was a touch disappointed because Jeremy Lin wasn't playing, so obviously I know how much better they play with Lin, and also Sean Kilpatrick didn't play. And the Pistons team is a team in the playoff race. They're fighting for – currently, I think they're in the ninth spot. They're fighting for the eighth and seventh seed. We know that's a tight race, and they lose this game. A big game to a bad team. So I was pretty happy. I was also, it's cool to see the Nets, and like, obviously you mentioned they've had a rough season, worst record in the NBA, but there's still like such a positive energy around the Nets team and organization. And it was kind of cool to see how excited the young players got when Brook hit that shot. Caris LeVert like jumped on his back like a little kid.
Yeah. Even Brook said something about Caris getting in the gym after that.
Yeah. Brook was just like walking with Caris LeVert on his back. Like nothing was there. But it was a good moment for them. And, I mean, winning, you know, I know it's not a big deal, but I think the Nets are like 5-7 in their last 12 games, which is a lot better than they were all season. It kind of gives them some positive momentum going into next season. And even free agency-wise, you know, like, all right, look at our record with Jeremy Lin. Look how much better we play. Look at the development of Caris LeVert and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and even Isaiah Whitehead. So there's some definitely plus marks. And I'll give a quick shout-out to Quincy Acey, who's a guy the Nets signed from the D-League. He's kind of bounced around the NBA. Somewhere out of nowhere, he must have developed a shot in the D League, but Quincy Acey shooting over 50% from three for the Nets. So whatever he's doing is working, and he brings some nice energy to the team too.
Yeah, and we knew that when Lin came back that the quality of their play would increase, and it definitely has. What, he's been back for, what, 6 or 7 games, maybe a little more than that, and they've gotten a few wins. They beat the Knicks a couple times, played Boston tough, played Dallas tough, last night's win. So we knew that he'd have – a great impact on them, and he definitely has.
Yeah, for sure. And it's just nice to see any in progress with the team. Even these tough games they lose, like, you can still see the plus marks that I mentioned, the young players developing and the team chemistry and kind of understanding Kenny Atkinson's system, who I think will be a very good coach. It's kind of like similar to the Brett Brown situation where we can't really judge him early on, but from what I've seen from him and the players develop as the season progresses, has been great. And he's great at making plays out of timeouts, which is an underrated thing. I think at one point last night, the Nets had just given up the lead, or the Pistons had just tied. They call a timeout, drop a play, Brook gets a wide-open layup, and won. So it was kind of a nice little thing for Atkinson to showcase his abilities too.
Yeah, and I've always been high on him, and it's going to be interesting to see what he could do with another full year of healthy players. And it's a work in progress, but – I don't necessarily think you could criticize Atkinson at all for what hasn't gone right this year for that team.
Exactly. But enough about the Nets. I know most people don't really give a shit about them.
We got to spend, when you get a win like that and you were at it, we got to spend at least 30 seconds on it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Pistons, though. I mentioned they're in a tight playoff race. They just blew this game. And, like, personally, for me, it's like they regressed all season. I know I was on a Corey and Matthew Handel's podcast earlier this week, Central Intelligence, and I talked about the Pistons and how I'm not really impressed by them. They're kind of disappointing all season long, and that last night's game kind of proved that to me even more.
Yeah, the Pistons have been a model of inconsistency throughout the course of the season. And like you said, a game that meant a lot to them last night as they continue to battle for that eighth and final playoff spot with Miami. And it's just a group to me that outside of, you know, Drummond has been decent, but, I mean, you got some inconsistent guard play. I kind of feel bad for Stan Van Gundy. I know he coached his rear end off every night and one of the hardest working guys in the business, but he just hasn't really gotten consistency from anywhere up and down that roster.
Yeah, and Reggie Jackson's been a real disappointment for that team. Obviously, he started the season off with that knee tendonitis, and he's just been inconsistent all year. And some games he's getting outplayed by Ish Smith. I'd say last night Ish Smith did more for them than Reggie Jackson did. So it's kind of when a guy like that's supposed to lead your team and he's not really able to do that, it kind of just hurts your whole season. I mean, last year after watching them, they did get swept by the Cavs in the first round, but they showed some promise in that matchup and they played them tough. And I thought going to the season, we definitely see some progress, but instead we saw them regress.
Yeah, there's regression. And even Drummond, like I mentioned, been okay, but I still think you could expect a lot more than him this year. I know he's averaging 14 rebounds a game, but I think we expected to see more from Drummond too.
Well, and the thing with Drummond is, like, last year early on, he had like this stretch where he was like super dominant and he was having like 30, 16 games type games like that. And then just out of nowhere, it kind of cooled off. And this season, there hasn't been quite the same amount of hype around him. He hasn't really added to his game and made himself more dangerous. And in a league where 3-point shooting from 7-footers and centers is so important, and Drummond really can't shoot outside of the paint.
Yeah.
So that definitely hurts his value. It hurts his team, and his free throw shooting is atrocious. So that's another negative for him. And it's tough for centers nowadays that can't shoot to play a lot of minutes and really have a big offensive impact. But defensively, he does bring it in. He's a great rebounder, as you mentioned. 14 boards is no joke.
Absolutely not.
But talking, you know, the Lopez twins kind of were the main storyline last night because, you know, Brooke hit the buzzer beater, and then Robin, on the other hand, got in a fight with Serge Ibaka, and there was punches thrown. You know, Serge and Robin both really didn't connect, but it's rare that you see punches thrown in an NBA game like that situation we saw last night in Toronto.
Tempers are flaring. Bring the hate back, as you had called for. I know you don't mind it, but I know Brooke had a couple comments about this. But
yeah, Brooke and Robin have. If you don't really understand the relationship, you'd be like, wow, Brooke's like the worst brother ever. But wow. It's pretty funny stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of a scuffle, and out of nowhere, all of a sudden you see blows exchanged. And I know they both got a game. I thought there could be potential for more than that.
I was surprised it was only a game. That is really surprising. And I saw someone tweet and they were like, well, if it's only a game to get into a fight, like, definitely see more players throw punches.
Yeah. Well, but it's because they didn't really connect. I mean,
yeah, it was just like more of a scuffle. Like, and just so there's so many people like in between all of it trying to break it up so fast. It's kind of funny though. Like, I didn't watch the game. Obviously, I was at the Nets game, so I didn't see that game. But, like, the play that caused the fight, it wasn't anything crazy. We've seen way worse things not really have physical confrontation. Do you think it's just because Serge and Robin are both kind of feisty players and they, like, aren't afraid to go to anybody?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't know if I would describe Robin as feisty. I know he plays tough, but over the
– No, I think he's feisty. He's got into it with a few guys before in the past.
Ibaka a little bit too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's ever gotten to that point though. It's escalated to that level where he's ever thrown a punch in his career. But it's funny because I was just arguing about this with Matthew about how players know how valuable they are to their teams. They know the tolerance level that the commissioner has for this. Yeah, and then Curry the other night with the lesser, bigger of the name, Kristan, or whoever the guard was for the Thunder, and he said, you know, Curry, you know, one of the guys in the lead that is absolutely not going to retaliate, you know, fake tough guy, blah, blah, blah. But you think about some of the stronger players in the league, and I just keep thinking about like LeBron and Westbrook and these guys, and very rarely does it get to the point where these guys are going to throw punches. It's not the 1990s anymore for the simple fact of the tolerance level of it. I just think, you know, they shy away from that. You look at all these fights that come up. I was watching something today where they were showing Shaq and Brad Miller's fight. And Shaq's been in some fights where it looked like he could kill somebody. Yeah, so it's a little bit more rare, and you just don't see that kind of escalation anymore. But sometimes, you know, things happen.
Yeah, a lot of the time we hardly ever – that was, like, so shocked. Actually, somebody at the Nets game was sitting next to me, and I heard them mention Robin Lopez got in a fight. And I was just like, what? Like, I didn't really understand if they were being serious or not. So then at halftime, I looked at my phone, and then I saw the clip. You know, it's rare that we see this fist fight. It's usually like the fake tough guy stuff, and then they push each other and they act like they're going to fight and they're not really going to fight. And to your point, Harris, it doesn't make much sense for them to fight. Like, getting suspended for one game for Steph Curry or LeBron James or Russell Westbrook, it really doesn't make much sense. You know, their value to their team, it's like, you know, you just put your team in a position where they're probably going to lose the next game. So it's okay. Like, I'm have no problem with no one throwing punches. Like, if you want to get up and talk shit to him, that's fine. Like, and like fake shove them around. That's like the most you can really do without getting ejected and just getting teed up. So it's like, what do you really want these star players to do when someone takes a shot at them? It's really not their job to fight back. That's why you usually have like that dude on your roster that's like there to enforcer and protect your star player.
Yeah. And leading me into what another point that I wanted to make is, you talk about Curry and LeBron not wanting to have to miss a game, but what's the big talk right now around the league right now?
Yeah, and you're right. The big talk is rest.
Rest and players getting missing a game or two. So if let's just say, and unless I'm not going to propose the idea of LeBron just throwing a haymaker at somebody, but missing a couple games right now isn't necessarily the worst thing, according to a lot of these coaches around the league, and the way that you hear medicine a lot, you hear the way their bodies are recovering. It's definitely a hot topic and debate around the league right now.
Yeah. I mean, I know TJ, we just had one of our writers, they just wrote something on this, and they're pretty strong and aggressive on the point. They don't think players should get days off, and that was Kyle Zewet. I probably don't know how to pronounce his last name right, so I apologize. But, you know, he was pretty aggressive in his take, and he thinks that players shouldn't get rested. Like, they're paid to play this game. Normal people don't get rested. And he also brought up a great point for the fans, which is the point that I understand, because I understand both sides of the spectrum here. You know, players need rest. It's not like, it makes more sense if they're not going to tear their ACL and miss 82 games next season that they miss four extra games this year. But he brought up the point of, you're like a fan of one of these teams. You live in a small market town. You don't really get much chances to go to the game. You're probably 8, 10 years old. You know, you ask your parents to buy you tickets when LeBron James comes to town, or when the Spurs come to town. You know, maybe you like one of these big teams and you go to this game, you're so pumped, you got a LeBron jersey on, and then you know he's getting rested, and then you just spend all these monies for these tickets, because we all know that they overprice the tickets for the big names. It's been going on in the NBA for a while. So you just put out all this extra money just to see a team that doesn't even have the star players. So from the fans' perspective, it's kind of messed up, and you kind of get G'd out, because you usually buy, you know, it's not like a lot of time you don't buy your tickets a day of the game, you buy it weeks in advance or something like that.
And the big issue is that a lot of these games are happening on the Saturday night primetime too.
Yeah, that's the worst. When it's in the primetime matchup, I mean, like, you know, I'm not like against resting. Like, I definitely see it as a real cause. And like, sometimes these days of rest are preventing further injury, or these guys are like slightly banged up. You know, your knee's kind of sore, your ankle's a little bit sore, you know, your elbow's not feeling right. Like, you might want to take a game off because you don't want to go full out for, you know, the whole game. I get it. Like, whatever, no big deal. But like, these primetime matchups, when we get like the Spurs and Warriors, and then like they rest all their stars, it's really frustrating as a fan. And I'm sure it's frustrating as a league, because I'm sure they're losing a ton of money. And these networks are paying extra to get these games, and they're getting these games, they're getting terrible return value because the players aren't playing.
Yeah. And it's you said, it's not going to be that Tuesday night in Milwaukee. It's coming up, and the reason why, and LeBron thinks the reason why it's becoming such a big deal is that because he's being involved in it now, and it's not just the Spurs who have basically made this famous in trying to prolong careers right now and trying to sustain their longevity. But at the same time, to me, it's one of those situations that it gets tricky. Because, yes, in the mid-90s, guys like Karl Malone and Michael Jordan and all these names come up of guys that played 82 games. But the more these legacies lean towards championships, guys are setting themselves up for that April to June run and not so necessarily putting the – and this is why the argument of the NBA regular season is getting tough to watch for some people, is because the stock in some of these big games has dropped. The amount of teams that people think are championship contending teams has fallen a little bit, but the main argument seems to be right now that there's not enough stock put in the regular season for a lot of these teams.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's tough to say and it's tough to argue. Unless they shorten the season and make the games more valuable, you know, they went from, people have mentioned in the past, from 80 to 60 games, which I wouldn't be totally opposed to. Because, like, if it's going to prevent players from resting, that would be nice. It would add more value to the games because you'd have less time to make up games behind. So, but it's like you said, it's a slippery slope because there's two ways. Like, if you're a player and you're LeBron, you've been to the final six straight years. I think somebody did some numbers on it, and he's played almost like an extra season or two than most players in the league because of all the games he's played in the playoffs and the finals. Those numbers are going to add up, and all the other guys aren't playing those amount of games. LeBron's going to be more fatigued. No matter what he does, like, those minutes are eventually going to catch up to you. It's just wear and tear, you know what I mean? So,
I know Steve Kerr's talking pay cut, but I'm not exactly sure who else in the NBA is. You know, he mentioned that if the season went down from 82 to 75, or like you had mentioned, that lockout season was tough because there were some instances where, obviously this wouldn't happen, but when they were those back-to-back-to-backs because they had
– Yeah, that was ridiculous. That was like the craziest thing I ever heard of. Yeah. Like,
but that was an exception. But
yeah,
the point is if the games are – if they do decrease some of the games, obviously it's going to affect pay and it's going to affect salaries. And Kerr mentioned this. Hey, I'll take the pay cut, but if you're a guy making, you know, $20 million a year, that's going to turn into what? You know, $16 million a year if you cut the games in a quarter, or you lose $450,000 per game or whatever that equates to be. It's not something that's going to go over easily with, you know, with a lot of these big name guys, Nick.
Yeah, it would have to be some type of agreement. I mean, I don't see anything happening in the near future. I'll be interested because Adam Silver said that it was a significant issue for the NBA if they try to enforce some type of rule or policy, because that would be interesting because they don't want to see this, and it sucks for the fans, like I mentioned, but you also don't want to see players get hurt. And you know what I mean? Like, I would like to see the numbers of like when the NBA started resting, if it's helped with the injuries.
I think there's probably some evidence in both ways, in both directions, but I don't see how. You know, guys, there have been guys that come out and say this year my goal is to play 82. And I know what, Harden hasn't missed a game, and Westbrook's probably hasn't missed a game, or maybe one. I know Curry's missed one. There are certain guys that make it their priority and make it their goal. And
yeah, and some guys you got to force them to sit. Yeah. Like even some of the older players in the league, you know, you're like, all right, man, you got to rest tonight. Like, they want to play. It's not always though. It's not like necessarily the players. A lot of time it's management or the training team, and they're realizing like, oh, you know, it would kind of make sense. They're doing studies. I know a lot of teams have put money into analytics, and they're not only studying on-court stuff, they're studying off-court stuff like rest and health and things like that, and sleeping. So, I mean, it's definitely a thing we'll keep an eye on going forward.
Yeah, 100%. I don't know how much of an issue it's going to be down the stretch for a team like the Cavaliers. I know if the one seed does mean something to them, I think they're going to put their foot on the gas a little bit down the stretch here.
Yeah, that is very true. I mean, when the games do matter, they do rest. And like I mentioned before, I think I mentioned this on Saturday, sometimes these coaches are going to rest games because they want to lower their playoff seeding because they might get a better matchup of their lower seed in some cases. But enough about talking about playoff seeding, though, and you mentioned the one seed. Who's the biggest threat to the Cavs in the Eastern Conference? You know, what team could beat them in a playoff series? I recently posted it on Twitter, a poll, you know, who's the biggest threat. And so far we got over 100 votes. Celtics are at 51%, Wizards at 30%, Raptors at 15%, and 4% of other. What team would you go with as the biggest threat to the Cavs?
You know, I've been back on forth in this, and you know I was high on the Wizards to be the team to be able to give them a run because of what I saw from Wall in January and February. And he's still playing at a relatively high level. But to me, I might have to lean towards the Celtics right now. I think they're playing a brand of basketball that suits a long series with the Cleveland Cavaliers and potentially being able to get to that Eastern Conference Finals. But Isaiah Thomas, and I think Horford's picked up his level of play.
He's improved. He had a rough start to the season and rough stretches because he had so many injuries all year long. But the more games you get to play and the more you get to know your team, especially a player like Al Horford, who's known for making some great passes, mm-hmm. I think that helps a lot.
I know they just lost the Sixers the other night, but they did. They just did beat Washington on Monday. And like I said, Horford has played a lot better. Jay Crowder's been pretty good. I like the makeup of Boston's team going forward, and I think they're going to play their best basketball when it matters most.
And you like them more than Washington probably because they're deeper?
That too. I mean, we've also discussed the frustration we had that, you know, Washington wasn't deep enough and that they rely so much on their starters.
They did make the moves of Bogdanović and Jennings, though, which have helped a lot.
Yeah, Bogdanović more than Jennings, I think.
Yeah, no, for sure. Bogdanović is really – I mentioned it when we did the OTG fast break on the trade is Bogdanović was going to be a great fit there because he would be asked to be the third or fourth option, and he was just getting open shots. And John Wall is so great at setting up his teammates because he attracts so much attention. I mean, I think it's so close, like Boston and Washington. And, like, you still – like, the Raptors are still kind of an unknown because, like, Lowry back healthy. Like, he definitely adds another element, but it'll be like, can he get his rhythm back with all these new pieces in time to really compete with the Cavs? Especially because it looks like they'll get the fourth seed and have to get the one matchup with the Cavs. It would be tough to beat them. One of our other writers actually wrote an article how if Boston had a chance against the Cavs. And you talked about how if they have to match up with a team like Washington in the first round instead of a team like Toronto, it would definitely help Boston a lot more because they'd have to battle through it. Where so people are thinking, you know, if they get a matchup with Toronto, the Cavs might be able to just kind of push through that. Where so if they have to face a physical team like Washington or a gritty team like Boston in that second round matchup, it really hurt them in the Eastern Conference Finals and give one of these Eastern Conference teams a chance.
I don't know if the Celtics will fall all the way down there, but the Wizards is definitely a possibility in the second round.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that actually makes a lot of sense because the Wizards are going to just like – play you really hard. I mean, the Raptors could play you really hard too. So I think I'll probably agree with you right now that I think the Celtics are the biggest threat because they have that veteran Al Horford, they have that clutch player in Isaiah Thomas, and they're a little bit deeper and they could probably go longer with the Cavs. Washington, though, they do have that superstar punch, that John Wall, that Bradley Beal. So I think Boston and Washington, I still think Toronto is going to be tough for them to find their rhythm in enough time to really beat the Cavs and challenge them. Any other teams in the East that you think are
– Well, we can't – it would be unfair to sleep on what the Bucks have done of late. I think you got to give them credit for the way they've played over the last 10 games.
Yeah. Do you think
– What's that?
Go ahead, Harris.
No, the Heat have done what they've done too to get themselves near 500. Those are the bottom feeders in the Eastern Conference playoffs right now. I think Boston and Cleveland won't have problems with them, but just want to give those two teams credit for the job they've done over the last 10, 12 games.
Yeah, and when I mentioned I was on Central Intelligence on Monday, we and Corey talked about it a little bit. I said the Pacers could be an interesting matchup just because they're really inconsistent, and I don't think they're a great team, but they have the ability to play a lot better than they are, and they have a player in Paul George who really, I don't want to say can match up with LeBron, but in some ways he can. And they have some talented veterans on that team that might have some extra juice. I don't think they'd beat them in a series. I just think it'd be an interesting matchup in the playoffs.
Well, none of these teams are really, outside of LeBron's Cavs, you know, playoff experience. I know Toronto's been deep and Atlanta, but nobody has that playoff pedigree to be like Paul George has.
Yeah. And Paul George, I mean, that Pacers team is probably, you know, in recent memory, one of the teams in the East that's actually been able to kind of give LeBron a run for his money, and there was no guarantee they were going to win every time they faced the Pacers in a seven-game matchup.
Is Corey getting excited over there?
No, Corey actually disagreed with me, and he went with the Bucks. So I got to give
Bucks
him credit.
Are a bigger threat.
He went with the Bucks as a bigger threat than the Pacers because we just talked about only Central teams.
Central, right?
Yeah. So, but I mean, he made some good points about the Bucks just because they have Giannis. Obviously, Chris Middleton's been great since Jabari Parker went down. And I mentioned Jason Kidd could probably draw up some weird schemes to kind of slow down LeBron in a seven-game series. I don't think they'd win, but they'd probably try some weird stuff.
Yeah, nobody's won more over the last 10 than the Bucks, the hottest team in the league technically right now.
Yeah. I mean, and they have some great players, and they can really play some interesting style of basketball because they have a versatile roster. They lack shooting, but they have they have length. And, you know, athleticism. So definitely Bucks are a weird team to watch.
Quality wins in there too. Some quality.
Yeah.
And, you know, they get the opportunity now to make up some ground. And I don't know who they, you know, when you talk about matchups and who's going to play who, but the Bucks get as high as 5, maybe. But I don't think that really matters whether you play the Celtics, Wizards, Raptors in that first round. I think the Bucks are just looking to play their best when it matters most, and they get the next 10-12 to kind of figure themselves out a little bit more and try to have that chemistry going into April.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, like Boston, Washington, and Toronto. I mean, like they're good teams. I think they're better than the bottom half of the Eastern Conference playoffs, but I don't think it's unheard of for us to maybe see an upset in the first round. Like, I don't think any of those teams, like you mentioned, are like, oh, playoff success, like playoff proven teams that are like, oh, they're going to take care of business and, you know, handle their business. And because, like, we mentioned the teams like the Hawks who have some success and the Pacers had some success. And you just mentioned how the Bucks are so hot. So it could definitely be some interesting first round matchups, which will be nice for us.
Definitely. And like I've talked about, the Heat looks like we might get that matchup that we wanted, that I know the Heat fans are going to really enjoy. That 1-8 right now, if you look at it, it's the Cavs against the Heat.
Yeah, very true. And I mean, it's like funny to see, and the Heat are playing like out of their minds, but I just think from a talent perspective, it'd be so hard for them to really give Cleveland like any run for their money. The one thing they have is Hassan Whiteside, and the Cavs really don't have a lot of size inside.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that would be over quickly, in my opinion. But
yeah, they would handle business.
You know, only it's amazing they've only lost 6 games since the middle of January. A team that, I know we say this all the time, looked like they were headed straight for the lottery, and it's amazing what a couple months has done.
And they lost one of their better players in Justice Winslow. Like he, yeah, you know, he's not a bad player. He gives some energy, some defense. His scoring was improving. But talking about the playoffs, let's take a look over at the Western Conference, where we have what is a tight race right now for the 8th spot between 2 teams, and that's the Nuggets, who are trying to hold on, and the Portland Trail Blazers, who've been carried by Dame Lillard post All-Star break. Dame Lillard, which is on another level. You know, every year he gets snubbed. Like this year, I didn't think it was so bad because there's just so many great guards. Last year was definitely worse, but you know, he's coming out and he's putting the team on his back and he wants to get in the postseason.
They are. And I think they're going to take over that 8th spot over the Nuggets, led by Lillard. That the angry Damian Lillard that, like you mentioned, we've seen before in this situation, just go off. And he's had some vintage. I mean, he's led this team in scoring in 7 straight games.
I think he's averaging. I know I saw a graphic, you know, a day or two ago. I know he was averaging like post All-Star break over 30 points a game.
Yeah, and then so, 36 against San Antonio was mean. That was just.
And San Antonio's no, like putting up 36 on San Antonio is no joke.
49 at Miami too was not a bad defensive team. It's just in one of those other zones, and then he gets the Knicks off a back to back tomorrow, which is, you know, that could be a big night for him. And you know,
he just has this ability to like just get super hot and score from anywhere on the floor, and he like has that Curry effect where. Like, I know 2 seasons ago, we were kind of talking about him as like a Curry light in a way, because his ability to just like pull up from 3 and hit shots that he shouldn't be hitting over defenders, he shouldn't be hitting them over.
Yeah, and then they get the Denver game's going to be really big on the 28th. That one's going to be one to watch. And I know you'd have to look at the schedules. I know I'm looking at Portland right now. And who would you rather see? The Trailblazers, who have faced the Warriors, did play them in last year's second round, have been in the playoffs a couple times. We know that they'll probably lose that first-round series, if not definitely lose that first-round series, unless they miraculously, you know, pass the Thunder, which I don't even know is possible. They can't do that. So that as high as they go as 8, do you rather see them or Jokic and the Nuggets get an opportunity to play in the postseason for the first time under him?
That's a good question right there. You know, there was some news today that Kevin Durant – might be back before the regular season ends. So it'll likely be a sweep in the first round for whoever they face. So in that situation, if Durant wasn't playing, I might want to see Portland, because I think they can make a nice series out of it. But since both teams will probably get swept, I'll go with Denver just because I want to see that team progress more. And I don't really like the Portland's like team setup, so maybe this would kind of push them to make a bigger move.
Yeah, and that fan base has suffered a little bit post-Melo, and they did make that postseason that that run in 13, they had those like 57 wins, and then they lost the Warriors in the first round. But I think that crowd would be really energized, and it would be a fun environment in Denver to have them back in the postseason. And like you said, Portland's been there. They've had their opportunities. They've disappointed, but I think Denver will give a nice kick and of energy into that city and that arena.
Yeah, and I mean, they made the trade this year where it was, you know, the Portland and Denver trade where they traded Mason Plumlee to Denver for Nurkic and a first-round pick, and how crazy it would be if Portland made the playoffs over Denver and they just got Nurkic, who's been playing great for them, and they got a first-round pick. It would be a bad look for Denver. So I think Denver is more interested in getting the 8th seed, where Portland kind of was unsure if they're going to make the playoffs earlier in the season, so it's probably not as big a deal. But knowing Dame Lillard is a big deal, so it should be a tight race for the rest.
And a lot of people were scratching their heads at Portland for doing that because people were high on Mason Plumlee. But like you said, Nurkic has definitely performed better than I thought he would as a Blazer.
Yeah, no, he's been impressive, and it's interesting because in Denver, I think it was his rookie season, he finished the season strong. And then Jokic came around, everyone kind of forgot about Nurkic, and they tried to work together, and they really couldn't work that well together. And they trade him to Portland where he has a completely fresh slate, and this is like a situation where you see a player in a different situation, he just excels because he's exactly what they're kind of looking for at that center position. He gives them some toughness, some presence, and he has some type of energy, and he's kind of like a smart ass, and he kind of gives them like extra enthusiasm to that Portland team.
Yeah, and he's just been one of those guys that has given them what they needed. And, you know, like you said, he's, you know, I don't know what you were hearing about this, but to me, there was definitely questions about this deal. A lot of people were confused about it. He had that big 28-20 game. And over the last four, he's been in double figures. His rebounding numbers are up. He's been efficient. And he's not as bad defensively as I thought. You know, he's been pretty good defensively, too. And I know he's had some big blocks, too.
It's been a pretty successful move for Portland. But talking about Portland, did you get a chance this week to listen to Drake's new album, More Life?
I've heard a couple of songs on it. I know a lot of people are going nuts about this. I heard Passion Fruit, and then the one that sampled J-Lo's song.
Yeah, Teenage Fever.
Yeah, I've heard Teenage Fever. That was pretty good. Passion Fruit.
Some good stuff. You got to download the whole thing and give it a full listen. I definitely love it. Me and Corey talked about it a little bit on Monday. Drake's just a unique artist with his ability to, you know, attack music in so many different ways.
Yeah, no, he's definitely at the top of his game right now, and I'm always been a Take Care fan. But we'll see as far as where this one will rank when it's all said and done. But his legacy is definitely off the charts right now, and he continues to cement himself as maybe the best in the game. So
yeah,
I got to get to listen to the whole thing. But I definitely liked a couple of tracks that I heard so far.
Yeah, for sure. But that wraps it up for today. Great show, Harris. And as always, thanks everybody for listening. And make sure you hit that subscribe button.
Yes, sir.
And we'll catch you guys this weekend.
All right. Take care, guys.